Hare Krishna. So I'm grateful to be here. Amongst all of you at the lotus feet of their lordships. And I'll speak, as is mentioned, on the topic of how to be responsible without being detached. No, that's the worst thing we could do. We'll talk about how to be detached. I'll speak on the topic of how to be detached without becoming irresponsible. So I'll base this on one of the better known verses of the Gita, 2.47. Karmanevadhikaraste ma phaleshu kadachana ma karma phala heturbhur ma te sangostva karmani. So Krishna says in this verse that we have a right to do our work, do our duty. But ma phaleshu kadachana, but do not crave for the result. Ma karma phala heturbhur, do not think that you are the cause of producing the result. At the same time, ma te sangostva karmani, do not be attached to not doing your work at all. So actually, if you look at these four parts, they can seem quite confusing. I was at a university and I was talking with a student who is studying Hinduism as a part of religious studies, and he says, this whole idea makes no sense to me. He says, like, working without attachment to the result is like drinking water from a glass which has no water. He says, what is the use? We pick up a glass and we drink it, we pick up the glass and drink water. The purpose is we want to get water from it. If you're telling work, we work to get results. What inspires us to work is the dream, the vision, the ambition that we'll get the result. So if you say don't be attached to the result, then what would be the motivation for working? It's like simply you're told, pick up a glass of water and keep moving it to your mouth. But there's no water in it. So it just seems so pointless. So I had an elaborate talk with him. I explained to him that firstly, the Bhagavad Gita, when it uses the word results, follow, that word result is different from the word goal. The Bhagavad Gita is not telling us don't set goals. The Bhagavad Gita is not telling us don't dream of achieving goals. In fact, if we see, after the Bhagavad Gita was spoken, when the Kurukshetra war started, every day the Pandavas would plan a war strategy. And an integral part of that strategy would be to set goals. Most famously, on the 14th day, after Abhimanyu had been brutally killed on the previous night, Arjuna, who was the father of Abhimanyu, was infuriated. Arjuna said that the next day, either I will avenge the death of Abhimanyu by killing Jayadrath, or I will enter fire. And here clearly he is setting a goal. And Krishna doesn't tell him, hey Arjuna, have you forgotten? Ma phaleshu kadachana? No, he doesn't tell that. So we have to understand the difference between setting goals and being attached to results. The Gita is telling that ma phaleshu kadachana, don't be attached to the results. And why should we not be attached to the results? Ma karma phala heturbhur. Because we alone are not the cause of the result of the work. What does this mean? If we look at the way we function in life, whenever we do any action, that we want to do it with the intention of getting some result. Say, right now I'm giving a class. My intention is that, you know, say, whatever I'm speaking is understandable to you, and that I can share the whatever knowledge of Bhagavad Gita I have, so that your understanding improves. Now this is a result I have in mind. If I start speaking in a way, if I come here and speak in pure Sanskrit, I can speak it. I mean, even if I could speak it, but still, the result would be nobody would understand. So whenever we do any activity, we do have some purpose in mind for doing it. So it is not that we are meant to be uncaring about the purpose. But getting that result is not in our hands alone. When I was in, just about a month ago, I was in Silicon Valley, and the devotees had organized programs for me in Google, Intel, Microsoft, and Stanford. And somehow all these places, they chose the same topic. So I spoke on the topic of the missing self in the selfie. The missing self in the selfie. So I spoke essentially about how we have so much technological progress, but still there is psychological distress. And people feel that their life is pointless, that they're not finding joy, and that's why mental health problems are going up, suicide is happening. So anyway, I'm not going to go into the content of that class, but the point was, I spoke more or less the same content, maybe 90% was same, each class I adjusted. But I found that each place, the audience received it differently. The one place, the audience was very happy. The second place, it appeared as if the audience was looking at me as if I was speaking in a different language. And third place, some of them were interested, some of them were not at all interested. And the fourth place, Stanford was the last class, there practically after every few minutes, what I was speaking, the audience was laughing and cheering and clapping. And then that gave me the realization that my content was the same. I was the same. So there is a verse in the Bhagavad Gita, in the Bhagavatam, where Arjuna says, Tadvai dhanusoham rishaya, that this is, I am the same Arjuna, this is the same Vandivabho, this is the same chariot, but still my arrows are not hitting the enemy. What's happening? So I realized that actually, I realized is a big word, at least I got some glimpse of that realization, that how much our speech impacts others is not determined by our speech alone. Yes, our part is important. We need to prepare, we need to speak properly. But despite our best efforts, something beyond us determines the results. So it could be that the audience themselves may be less receptive at one place, audience may be more receptive at another place. It could be that the audience is in work pressure at one place and that's why they are distracted. Whatever, the factors could be many, but just because we do something to the best of our capacity does not mean the same result will come all the time. So the difference between goals and results, what I was talking about earlier, is goals are what we set so that we can do our best, so that we feel inspired. I want to achieve this, and by which I put in my best effort. So setting goals brings absorption. If before an exam I decide, you know, I want to get this much grades in my exam, or I want to get this many marks, then that gives me a sense of purpose, urgency, and that brings absorption. Whereas results are what come after the work is done. And doing the work is to a large extent in our hands. But getting the results is not in our hands alone. We may do our part and still the results may not come. So, obsessing over the results or attachment to the results causes distraction. Say if a student has to give exams and is one exam each day, and the first exam is given and somehow the student has done reasonably well but not so well, and the student starts getting worried. How many marks will I get in this exam? Should I get this much or that much? If I get this much, this will happen. If I get that much, that will happen. And the student gets consumed by that, and the result of that will be the next day's paper, student will not be able to focus and prepare. So attachment to results causes distraction. Whereas setting goals is before we do the action. Getting the results is what comes after the action. So the Bhagavad Gita's mood is that we should do our best, but we need to leave the rest, which is not in our control. So, ma phaleshu kadachana. Do not be attached to the fruits of work. This does not mean we don't care for the fruits. We do want things to work out in a particular way. But if they don't work out, we understand that it's not in my control, so I don't get obsessed with it. How can I get this detachment? That happens by ma karma phala hetur bhur. Do not think that you are the cause of the result. That now, are we not the cause? At one level, we are the cause, but we are not the only cause. Normally, we think of karma, this action, this reaction. And to some extent, we see that causal connection in our day-to-day life. Say, I feel hungry, I eat food, and my hunger gets mitigated. So, the action of eating food produces the result of mitigation of hunger. I feel tired, I take rest, I wake up, I feel energy. So the action of resting produces the result of bringing back, rejuvenating us. So normally we see a correlation between action and reaction. And that's why we start thinking that our action produces the reaction. However, suppose I have my digestive system is upset. And I may eat food, but that food, instead of providing me energy and mitigating my hunger, only increases the pain of my stomach. And then as the pain increases, stomach increases, then actually, initially at least I was just having the pain of hunger. Now I'm having the pain of a stomachache also. So similarly, sometimes I may feel tired, I want to sleep, but I'm just not able to sleep. Or sometimes I may fall asleep, but then I may get a nightmare. And then when I wake up after a nightmare, I feel more stressed and stressed than before I went to sleep. I met a person, he is afraid of sleeping. Because as soon as he sleeps, he gets nightmares. So Srila Baldev Vidyabhushan explains that actually our dreams are also real, in the sense that not that everything that we see is real, but dreams are also a realm where we get our karmic reactions. So the results of major karma come to us in the awakened state. So some bad things may happen to us. But results of minor karma will come in the dream as bad dreams. So some people may just have that karma by which they get bad dreams. So one of the names of Vishnu is, in the Vishnu Sahasranam, is Duswapna Nashanam. That Lord Vishnu is the one who destroys bad dreams. So I told him to recite the names of the Lord before chanting the holy names, before sleeping. And he keeps a tape of Prabhupada reciting the holy name just near his bed while sleeping. And he's found that the bad dreams have gone down substantially by that. So, now of course, how our karma comes and how our karma goes, we don't know. So, the important thing here is that because there is a correlation between action and reaction, or action and result, we often don't think that there is any other factor involved. This action and this result. But when that result doesn't come, then we start thinking, why is this result not coming? And then we may acknowledge that there is something more involved. The only time we remember our digestion is when it doesn't work. We just eat food, we get energy and move on with life. But there is a whole sophisticated machine inside us which actually is essential for the food to be converted into energy. So we could say that the action of eating food and the result of getting energy, in between there is this factor of the digestive system working properly. So most of the times we don't think about it at all. But sometimes when it doesn't work, we are forced to realize it. It is said that God gives and forgives. We get and forget. We have all committed so many mistakes, that Krishna gives us so many gifts in our life, and he forgives us many of our wrongs. But we get and we forget who has given it to us, that it is not ours, that we don't depend, that it's not ours to presume that it will always be with us. So now, when we recognize that between action and result, there is something more that is involved. That means I alone am not the producer of the result. So, among the activities that occupy people's minds today very prominently, one is sports. And sports is where performance matters. If there's a cricket match, the batsman has to bat well, the bowler has to bowl well, the performance matters. And yet, even the best sports players know that performance is not all that matters. That despite their best performance, sometimes something may just go wrong and the result may not come. So, a few years ago or a few decades ago, in cricket, Australian team was known to be the most aggressive team. So there they had this place, we are going to be go-getters, they are dominating the world. But even at that time, there are many Australian cricketers who had their own quirky superstitions. There was an Australian batsman, Mark Taylor. Whenever he would go out to bat, before going to the field, he would first go to the restrooms in the pavilion and shut the lids of all the commodes. And if you and if he would get out early, he would not go to the pavilion, he would go to the restroom, and if any commode lids would be open, he would go and blast his team members. Why did you keep this open? Because of that I got out. Now, what has the lid of the commode got to do with him getting out in the field? Actually, there's nothing. But that is his way. He also understands that there's something unknown beyond me which determines my results. And in a quirky way, maybe once he went to bat and he got out. Another time he went to bat, he just closed the commode lid. He went out, batted very well. So he associated that with that good performance. Now, whatever be the origin, that's not the specifics are not important. The important is the principle. That even people who are hardcore performers, they acknowledge that the results are not in their hands alone. And whatever unknown is there, they try to pacify it, appease it in their own idiosyncratic ways. So one idiosyncratic way could be that they try to do something like this. So between action and result, there is an unknown factor which is not in our control. So Krishna is telling us, therefore, do not think that you are the cause of the result. So then, our topic was how to be detached without becoming irresponsible. So detachment is from the results of, detachment refers to the results of the work. Responsibility refers to the work itself. Detachment refers to the results of the work. From the results of the work, we are to be detached. But from the work itself, we are not meant to be detached. We are meant to be concerned. We are meant to do our work properly. If a student has an exam, and the student is not studying at all, and the mother comes and says, "Study." He says, "No, I'm detached." That is not detachment. That is irresponsibility. You have to do your studies properly. So irresponsibility refers to the work. If I don't care for the work at all, that's not being detached. If we have to cook for the deities and we are careless about what ingredients we put, how well we cook, say I'm detached. Not detached. That is irresponsible. So detached, we can be detached by not obsessing over the results. But we can be responsible by being concerned about the work. That's why Krishna says, karmanne vadhikaraste. We have a right to do our work. And that's the last part, 2.47d is, mate sangostu akarmani. That do not be attached to not doing your work. So to not be attached to doing your work means do not be detached from your work. Do not be detached from your work. Do your work well. That is required. So how can, at one level, how can we be detached without being irresponsible? It can be simply by contemplating the nature of reality. Contemplating that there are some things in my control and some things not in my control. And the results depend on things that are not in my control. So to the extent I obsess over the results, to that extent I disempower myself. Because I don't have control over that. And whatever I have control over, I will not be able to do well. If I'm doing task A, and then I'm going to task B. But while doing task B, I'm worried about what is the result of task A. Then whatever be the result of task A, the result of task B is going to be bad. Because I'm going to be distracted from it. So, attachment to results is disempowering. Simply by contemplating the nature of reality, we can develop some healthy detachment. This is just not in my hands. Therefore, let me not worry about it. Let me focus on what is in my hands. So, attachment, what does it mean? Attachment simply means that our mind malfunctions. We could say that, if you want to understand what the mind is and how it functions. If we consider, say, that there is, I was at a jeweler shop, a devotee was a jeweler, and he had a big, in his office, he had a big screen on which inputs came from the various doors. He had closed circuit TV cameras, and he could see who is coming in from which door, who is coming in from what door, and he could see it all. So now, similarly for us, we are getting inputs from the various senses, and they are coming onto an inner screen, that is the mind. So when we look at the mind, so when we look at the outer world, what is happening? So right now you are hearing me. So then the input from the ears, the input from the eyes, they are coming together, and they are coming as an integrated display on your screen, inner screen, that is the mind. And then we look at what is coming on the mind, and then we respond accordingly in the outer world. But this mind, which is meant to be like a screen that shows us what is going out there, what is going on out there, the mind, when it malfunctions, instead of being like a screen, it becomes like a TV. And it just starts showing something else. So, if instead of watching who is coming into the door, if a person starts watching some TV match that is TV, some movie that is going on, they'll get distracted. So similarly, when we are attached to something, then that attachment causes our mind to change from a window to the outer world. It changes from the window to a TV. It just takes us to an imaginary world. So if somebody is an alcoholic, say, if they're attached to alcohol, then they may be in an office in an important meeting, but in their mind is going on, I have to drink. When can I get a drink? So that is what dominates their inner screen. And they can't function. So attachment causes distraction. Of course, this is attachment to object itself. We are talking about work and its result. But I just took this example to illustrate the point that attachment causes our mind to get misdirected. It causes our mind to malfunction. And that way, attachment distracts and disempowers us. So what do we... So if we are detached, then we can focus on whatever we are doing. If somebody is too attached, there's a person is in charge of security, supposed to look at the screen, who is coming in. So they're very attached to cricket. And then they start watching a cricket match. And while they're watching a cricket match, some thief comes in and steals the jewelry from there. That would be a disaster. So attachment, it not only distracts us, but it also distorts our perspective of things. When we are attached to something, that thing becomes much, much more important than other things which may be actually far more important. So watching who is coming into a high security establishment, that is much more important than watching the scores of a cricket match. But attachment distorts our sense of importance and makes less important things appear more important. So when we are attached to results, we could say the inner screen which is there, instead of focus being a window which helps us to focus on the work that we are trying to do, it becomes like a TV and it takes us, oh, what will happen about this, what will happen about that, what will happen about that, and thus it distracts us. So therefore it is detachment that helps us to focus, and in a sense detachment doesn't make us irresponsible, rather it is attachment that makes us irresponsible. When an alcoholic is attached to alcohol, then even when they have some work to do, they just can't do it because their mind is filled with the desire for alcohol. But if there's detachment, then detachment actually makes us capable of focusing on whatever we want to do. And thus, it is the detached who can be truly responsible. So at one level, see, the Bhagavad Gita has a thought flow. This particular verse, 2.47, is spoken at the level of Karma Yoga. So Krishna, Arjuna's vision is on the body. Krishna shifts Arjuna's vision to the soul in the second chapter of the Gita. And concomitantly, along with it, he shifts the mode of action from working for immediate results to working for spiritual growth. So from Karma Kanda to Karma Yoga. So this verse is spoken at the level of Atma Gyan and Karma Yoga. But as the Gita's thought flow progresses, it moves forward from Atma Gyan to Bhagavad Gyan, from knowledge of the soul to knowledge of the Supreme Soul, to knowledge of Krishna. And as it moves forwards from Atma Gyan to Bhagavad Gyan, similarly, its recommendation moves upwards from Karma Yoga to Bhakti Yoga. And in Bhakti Yoga, Krishna, for example, in the 18th chapter, 18.56-57, he talks about 18.57, says, Chetasa Sarva Karmani Mai Sanyasya Matparaha Buddhi Yoga Mupashitya Machitta Satatam Bhava. Chetasa Sarva Karmani, with your consciousness, renounce all work for my pleasure. Renounce the results of all work for my pleasure. And in this way, with your intelligence, always be conscious of me. So I talked about first, we can be detached by contemplating the nature of reality. But what the Bhagavad Gita recommends is much deeper. It recommends detachment by connecting with the Supreme Reality. By connecting with the Supreme Reality. That means that rather than saying, I'm not concerned about this result, I'm detached from it, a devotee focuses not so much on detachment from the world as on attachment to the source of the world, attachment to the Lord of the world. So we are concerned with Krishna, we are concerned with loving Krishna, serving Krishna, pleasing Krishna, and for his pleasure we want to offer ourselves completely. So we want to offer our consciousness to him. Chetasa sarva karmani mai sanyasya matparaha. So Krishna is saying, with your consciousness renounce the work and make me the supreme goal. So that means, let's say if we are speaking about Krishna, our purpose in speaking about Krishna is to please Krishna. One of my main services is writing. So in some ways, speaking is more stimulating than writing. Because in speaking, you can see the audience in front of you and see whether the audience is responding, connecting, appreciating. I mean, they write articles, often it's very difficult to know whether people are reading it or not, whether people are appreciating it or not. It's writing is like, say, there's a speaker, and in between the speaker and the audience, there's a thick curtain. So we don't know if the audience is there and is appreciating, the audience is sleeping, or the audience is not there also. So I had asked one of our senior devotee authors, how do we evaluate the success of writing? So, if we are going to speak, we see how many people are coming, how many people are benefiting. And you can say if somebody comes for a program regularly, they become interested, they start practicing bhakti. We can to some extent evaluate that. But it's not that by reading an article somebody is going to become a devotee. It's very difficult to discern that. So I asked this to His Holiness Jayadvaita Maharaj, and Maharaj told me, Krishna is glorified, that is the success. So I was a little taken aback by this answer. Okay, my mind was so attached, says, Krishna is glorified, that is okay, but I want to know the results in this world. So for every action that we do in this world, there is a spiritual result and there is a material result. And as devotees, we should be most concerned about the spiritual result. Of course, we are serving Krishna in this world, so we would like the results to be manifested in this world also. Like Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, he told Srila Prabhupada and he told his followers in general, if you go for a program and nobody comes, then preach to the walls. Because you will get purified by preaching to the walls. So here the point is that you speak about Krishna, by that we will become purified because Krishna is being glorified, and we will grow by that. So here the focus is on the internal result, the spiritual result. But at the same time, when Srila Prabhupada found that not many people were coming for his programs in India, people were not becoming serious, he did not just take Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur's instruction literally and stay lifelong in India preaching to the walls. He came to America. And he came to America and he endeavored to attract people, to go to places where people were interested and inspire them. But many of Srila Prabhupada's biographers, they tell that Prabhupada's energy in speaking about Krishna was the same whether he was speaking in a private darshan with 3-4 people, or he was speaking in a satsang program with hundreds or thousands of people. Because for him, the important thing was that he was glorifying Krishna. Of course, the way he might express himself will be different, the volume at which he speaks may be different, but the essential principle was that he was glorifying Krishna. So for us, when we are practicing bhakti, at that time, there is just by doing our duties, whether it is a direct devotional duty, such as, say, speaking about Krishna, distributing books, or it can be an indirect devotional duty, like doing our worldly responsibilities, taking care of family members, helping raise our children, doing our jobs. We do it all for the purpose of glorifying Krishna. I was at a university in India, and a student asked me, how can I make my other friends, my friends and other students as into devotees? I said, we can't make anyone into devotees, but what you can do is you can study well. There is no guarantee that if you study nicely, your friends will become devotees. But if you don't study well, there's guarantee your friends will not become devotees. If people start seeing that this devotion has made you irresponsible, it has made your performance go down, it has made you apathetic, say, I don't want to do anything about this. If we do our duty in a responsible way for the pleasure of Krishna, then what are we doing? People say, yeah, he's a nice person, does good work. I want to know what makes them tick. And then we can tell them about Krishna. So our work can also be done in a mood of worship to Krishna. Svakarmana tam abhyarcha. By your work, worship him. Some people very conveniently translate this as karma hi puja hai. That work is worship. However, the Bhagavad Gita is more specific. that it is Swakarmanatam Abhyarjo, by your work worship him. If work itself were worship, then the donkey would be the greatest worshipper. He said, donkey works so hard. No, work has to be done in a worshipful consciousness. But the point is, we can do our work with concern for the Supreme Lord, with the desire to please the Supreme Lord. And in that sense, a devotee's primary focus is on the eternal result. But because we are working in this world, we want to serve Krishna, so we want the external result also. And we strive our best to get the external result. But suppose the external result doesn't come, that doesn't necessarily mean that our activity is a failure. The world can sometimes be very unfair. Why unfair? Because, you know, I may work very hard. So some athlete is there, and that athlete practices for many years to go for some Commonwealth Games or Olympic Games or whatever. And just before the day of the main athletic event, they fall sick. Now the world will never know what effort they put in. So from the material point of view, if we don't get the result, it's like all our work has gone in vain. But from the spiritual point of view, you know, if I prepare very nicely for a class, and it's a very important class where many hundreds of people are coming, but just before the class I get a sore throat and I can't speak anything, I could say that all that preparation went waste. No, it didn't go waste. What happened was, during that preparation, I was absorbed in Krishna. I was connected with Krishna. I got purified by that. So, of course, we should also take care so that we can do the service and get the external result also. But the point is, when it comes to material results, sometimes the results are not in our control. And yet, the world will judge us by the results. So it can be very discouraging, because we put in all the effort, but just because of something going wrong, the effort did not translate into the result. And the world will not even notice or acknowledge all the effort that we put in. But in the case of Krishna, it is not like that. Krishna sees our effort. And as we want to serve him in this world, we also want the result. So we want the result, but we know that even if the result in terms of the external material result coming, even if that doesn't come, if we have put in the effort, Krishna has noted it and Krishna is pleased. And Krishna will give us the reward. Krishna will purify us. We will grow closer to him just by putting in the effort. Just by striving wholeheartedly. So, I was talking with one senior devotee, and Sannyasi's guru, so I was asking that sometimes when we speak, if the audience is not very enthusiastic, so how can we stay enthusiastic? So he told me that, again, first he told me that, you know, you should speak for the pleasure of Krishna. I told Maharaj, I'm not at that level. Tell me something practical. So then he told me, think that this speaking is the practice for your future classes when the audience will be interested. So what we have to do is, we have to somehow ensure that we don't become unenthusiastic in our bhakti. Sometimes we go out for distributing books and we try our best, but the person is just not interested. We can see that this is, okay, this result didn't come, but this is a practice. I am speaking enthusiastically. Future someone else will take. So, the external result may or may not come. But the internal result of pleasing Krishna is sure to come, even if no external result happens. Now, Srila Prabhupada came to America, and suppose none of the hippies had connected with him and they had not become devotees. Does that mean that Prabhupada was unsuccessful? No. Just Prabhupada's coming to America, even while he was alone in America, every day he was translating his Bhagavatam, every day he was glorifying Krishna. That itself is success. So in our bhakti, if we are just striving to serve Krishna, our devotion is successful at a spiritual level. And sooner or later, success will manifest at the material level also. And that will manifest by Krishna's plan. So now, what do we mean by Krishna's plan? Is it that Krishna doesn't want the results to come? Is it that Krishna tells us, you know, you share my message, those who share my message are very dear to me. And then when we try to speak, people are not interested. So is it that Krishna doesn't want people to become devotees? Krishna doesn't want people to come closer to Krishna? Not like that. Krishna does want that. But Krishna wants us more than the results. Krishna wants us more than the results. So I'm here, the results are here, Krishna is here. So we want to offer the results to Krishna. But Krishna wants us more than the results. And if getting the results is going to make us infatuated, it's going to make us proud, then Krishna may not give us the results. And by that, we may initially get frustrated, you know, what, nothing is happening. But over a period of time, if we are still hearing the philosophy, if we are understanding, then we will understand, we will, instead of frustration, there will be realization. Oh, why are people not becoming devotees? No, why is this not happening? So thinking, this is the problem. That we get the realization that I am not the sole doer. So I have to do my part, but it is Krishna who also will arrange the rest of the things. So then, when we acknowledge Krishna's role, then what happens? Then even when we get the result, we won't become infatuated. We won't become proud and arrogant thinking, see, what a great devotee I am. What a great book distributor I am. What a great preacher I am. We'll know that these results are manifesting by Krishna's mercy. And thus, we will be able to offer the results to Krishna and we will be able to offer ourselves to Krishna. Otherwise, in the name of offering the results to Krishna, we will offer ourselves to the results. We will offer ourselves to the results means that we will become so attached to it, we will become so proud of it, that we'll get distracted from Krishna. So sometimes Krishna may not give us the results of our service. That is not because he is displeased with us, but because he wants to give us some realizations. So I'll conclude with one incident. There's one devotee friend of mine. He was going to a place and he was trying to start a program over there. And he would go week after week, traveling almost 4 or 5 hours. And somehow people were not interested. Not many people were coming. So he became very disheartened. And then he went to his spiritual master. I told him, Maharaj, you know, I'm going so long over here. Nobody's interested. I'm thinking I should give up this program. So his spiritual master told him, you know, you're going there to preach the Bhagavad Gita. But the problem is, you are yourself not practicing the Bhagavad Gita. What do you mean? He says, the Bhagavad Gita says, be detached from the results. If you are attached to the results, how are you following the Bhagavad Gita? So this devotee told me that that meeting was like an open heart surgery without anesthesia. But somehow, he was so disturbed, I'm attached, I'm not practicing the Bhagavad Gita. It was just very strong statements. But somehow he realized what his spiritual master was saying was right. And then he said, that day we went to the deities and prayed, Krishna, whatever you want, please guide me. I want to serve you. Whatever way you want me to serve, I'm ready to do that. So he surrendered to Krishna. And the next week when he went, like previous time, when 5 to 10 people would not come, and that day 25 people were there and he had done nothing more. And not only 25 people were there, what had happened was one person had come for a program a few weeks ago, but he had gone out of station. And while out of station, he had gone on Google and read the Veda base, read some Prabhupada books, got very attracted. And he was like a social leader. So he got almost 15 of his friends. And all of them were already interested in spirituality. In fact, they all had a study group where they would study the Bhagavad Gita daily. but they couldn't understand much. And when they found somebody who is learned in the Bhagavad Gita and teaching the Bhagavad Gita, they just were so happy. And the whole shape of the program changed after that. So, actually, we needn't become discouraged when the results don't come. Because Krishna has his plan. And Krishna will bring the results according to his plan at his time. So that means that, now this doesn't necessarily mean that we keep doing the same service all the time if the results don't come. Like earlier I said, when Prabhupada was in India and the results didn't come, he changed strategies and went to America. So we have to use our God-given intelligence to decide whether the lack of result in a particular service is because I have not persisted enough, or the lack of result indicates that maybe I should be doing some other service. Maybe my talents, my abilities, my interests are different. And so I'm not meant, or maybe this place is not right, this venue is not right. That flexibility can be there. So detachment doesn't mean that we are uncaring about the results. We care for the results, but we care for Krishna more than we care for the results. And we think, how best can I please Krishna? So for a devotee, devotees are fixed in purpose, but flexible in practice. Fixed in purpose. My purpose is to serve Krishna. My purpose is to glorify Krishna. But how do I go about doing this? Should I do this or do that? We can be flexible about that. And another application of this principle of Karmane Vadhikaraste, with which I'll conclude this, that many of you are parents. So for parents, there's a lot of concern about how our children grow up, what kind of impressions they have, what kind of samskaras they get, how they become in life. And in one sense, that's a natural parental responsibility. But at the same time, in trying to mold our children in a particular way, we may deny or suppress their individuality. Even if we want them to become devotees, even if we want them to become good people, we want them to have great careers, but they are individuals in their own right. And they have to make their own choices. We can't force them. Sometimes what happens, if we become too invested in a particular role, in a particular service, in a particular activity, then we lose perspective. So we are not parents. We are souls who are servants of Krishna. And being a parent is a role, that is a service that we are doing. And that service is also for the pleasure of Krishna. So sometimes, just like in our different services, sometimes we may get a result, sometimes we may not get the result. So if we identify too much with a particular service, if I think I'm a book distributor and I can't distribute books, if I don't identify myself as a servant of Krishna, but I identify myself as a book distributor, and if my book distribution doesn't work out, then I start thinking that, oh, I'm a failure as a devotee. No, I'm not a failure as a devotee, just that book distribution didn't work out. So that's okay, I'll keep serving Krishna, maybe in this way or some other way. So if, sometimes what happens, if we are trying to mold our children in a particular way, and if they're not shaping like that, instead of seeing actually what is happening, we start taking that as a personal failure. Oh, you know, this means as a parent, I'm a failure. As a parent, I'm a failure means as a human being, I'm a failure. My life is a failure. And because of that, we may try to dominate the children too much. And then they may accept initially, but they will rebel afterwards. So we do our best, but they are souls in their own right. Krishna is present in their own hearts, in their hearts. And Krishna will guide them in due course. So if we give them the right impressions, we give them the right example, we provide them the facilities to practice Krishna Bhakti. In general, one human being can affect another human being only in three ways. We can provide knowledge, we can provide facilities, and we can provide example or inspiration. We can tell, you know, if you go this way, this will happen. If you go this way, this will happen. That is the knowledge. Then to go this way, we can provide the facility. And then we ourselves can walk along that way to show, set the example. But beyond that, it's for every individual to choose. And sometimes people may just go through phases. Mark Twain, this American playwright, American author, he said that when I was 15, my father was a fool. Now I'm 25 and I'm amazed how much the old guy has learned in the last 10 years. Now, it is not that the father has learned in 10 years, that may be true, but it is more that at 15 and at 25, what we consider learning is different. At 15, we are just in the mode of rebellion. So, you don't know anything, you know. I'm a new generation. Yes, there will be a new generation, but life's challenges are more or less the same. Some specific methods of challenges are different, but in our teenage years, we are too caught with the externals. You know, you don't understand the way I work. You don't know maybe how we think. So, difference may be there. So, some rebellion may be there. But in due course, Krishna will arrange things. So, we don't have to be attached to the result even of molding our children in a particular way. We are responsible in terms of doing what we can in providing knowledge, facilities, and example. But we understand they are not our children. They are Krishna's children. And Krishna has a plan for them. And sometimes, the best we can do for Krishna's plan to act is to get out of the way. Because, you know, we do what we can when they are children. But if they are going through a phase of rebellion, trying to crush them may just cause greater rebellion. So, of course, this is not a parenting class, and I'm not, and I have no experience as a parent. But I'm just talking the broad principle here, that we can be responsible, but we don't have to become attached. And if you do it this way, sooner or later, they will appreciate, and they will come to the right path. So this, if we are attached to Krishna more than the results of a particular work, then that is a way we can be both responsible without becoming obsessive, without becoming excessively worried, or without becoming distorted by our attachments. So what the Bhagavad Gita tells us, working without attachment is actually the most empowering way of working. Not only in terms of pleasing Krishna and getting the supreme result of attaining Krishna, but also in terms of having the best frame of mind for functioning in the world. Because our inner screen won't malfunction and distract us, and we will be able to do the best that is possible for us in our particular situation. So I'll summarize. I spoke on the topic of how to be responsible without being detached. Is that right? No. So, how to be detached without being irresponsible. So, I spoke primarily about how the Bhagavad Gita's verse at 2.40 in Karmanivadikaraste may seem counterintuitive. That results are what we dream of when we want to work. So, it's like drinking water from an empty pitcher. No, actually, there's a difference between goals and results. Setting goals brings absorption, whereas attachment to results causes distractions. Goals are what we set before we do the work. And Arjuna set goals every day in the Kurukshetra war. But results are what come after the work is done, and they are not in our hands. Normally, because there is certain actions produce certain results, so we presume that the action alone is the cause of the result. I eat food and I feel nourished. But in between the eating and nourishment is the digestive system, which we don't acknowledge till the digestive system doesn't work. So we alone are not the producer of the results. I gave the same class at 4 places, but the result on the audience was different. Why? Because I alone am not the producer of the result in the audience. So when we understand this, so simply by contemplating the nature of reality, that we alone are not the producer of results, we can become detached from the results while being responsible in the work. Even sports players, they have their quirky superstitions because they know performance matters, but performance is not all that matters. So first we can become detached by contemplating the nature of reality. So Krishna says that, so detachment is from the result of the work, and responsibility refers to the work itself. We do it well. At another level, as the Bhagavad Gita moves from Atma Gyan to Bhagavad Gyan, its prescription moves from Karma Yoga to Bhakti Yoga. So we can develop this combination of responsibility and detachment also by connecting with the Supreme Reality. So we care for Krishna more than we care for the results. And therefore, we want to offer our consciousness to Krishna through the work, and we want to offer the results also to him. But if sometimes Krishna's plan is different, then even if the external result doesn't come, still the internal result of offering ourselves to Krishna, of becoming purified, of increasing our bhakti to him, that will always come. So whereas the world is unfair in the sense that it doesn't acknowledge our efforts, only sees the results. Krishna is supremely fair because he rewards our efforts even if the results don't come. Now Krishna doesn't, it's not that Krishna doesn't want the results for us to offer to him, but he wants us more than the results. So if getting the results will make us attached, will make us infatuated, will make us arrogant, then Krishna will delay the manifestation of the result till we realize I am not the doer. So attachment causes our mind, which is like our inner screen, and this inner screen is meant to function like a window, but attachment causes it to function like a TV, and it distracts us. So detachment helps us to focus, and as detachment helps us to become more responsible. And the best way to develop detachment is by developing attachment to Krishna. So Krishna, I want to offer myself to you, and for your pleasure I want to offer these results also. So even if those results don't come, our purpose of pleasing Krishna will be fulfilled. And sometimes Krishna may give the results later, like somebody was preaching the Bhagavad Gita but people are not coming. As they surrender to Krishna and practice the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, I'm doing this for your pleasure, whether people come or not, then people suddenly started coming. So a devotee is fixed in the purpose of serving Krishna and is flexible about how to serve Krishna. Whether the lack of results means that we should persevere in the same service, or whether we should shift gear to some other service, that we can use our intelligence to decide. But a devotee is never discouraged in the purpose of serving Krishna. And the same principle of being responsible without, of being detached without being irresponsible, we can apply to parenting, where our responsibility is to provide our children knowledge, facility and example. But beyond that, what they become, it is their souls with their free will, and we are detached so that they can make healthy choices by using their own God-given intelligence. And thus, we won't appear as imposing and repressing their individuality, but we will help them to grow, and we will do our part in our service to Krishna. So by being detached and responsible, we can not only get the supreme result of pleasing Krishna, but also work in the most effective way in this world. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, please. Okay. How do we apply this point of being detached without being irresponsible in a marital relationship? Generally, again, the same point I said, that we are relational beings. So we define ourselves by our relationships. But bhakti essentially means it's not just coming to a temple or chanting the holy names. The essence of bhakti is that we change our self-definition. So I may define myself as a software engineer, as a project leader, as a husband, as a wife, as a parent. If I'm defining myself in this way, then if any problem comes in the defining relationship, my life will be shattered. If I define myself as a software engineer and I'm fired from my company, then I think, who am I? It's not a philosophical question, it's a distressing question at that time. I lost my self-identity. But if I understand that my defining identity is that I'm a servant of Krishna, And as servant of Krishna, I am doing this job of a software engineer. Then that relationship with Krishna gives us the inner security by which we can manage the ups and downs that will happen in any of the roles that we are playing. So similarly, when we are in a married relationship, if our defining identity becomes, I am the wife of so-and-so, or I am the husband of so-and-so, and if any problem comes in that relationship, then we feel as if our whole life is wasted. But if you understand that I am a servant of Krishna, I am a part of Krishna, Krishna always loves me, Krishna is always with me, and as a service to Krishna, I am acting in this relationship, then we can have, we can act in that relationship maturely. Otherwise, we may become too emotionally dependent on the relationship, or we may become too emotionally dominant and demanding in a relationship. So in both ways, that can lead to problems. So if we are practicing bhakti properly, if we understand bhakti properly and define ourselves as servants of Krishna, then even if there is some difficulty in the relationship, even if the other person is not acting properly, then we don't get too disturbed by it. We see, I am here, this person is here, and Krishna is here. So how best can I act in the situation by which I will please Krishna? So sometimes some people may be unreasonable and we just have to let them be the way they are. But sometimes they change if we act in a proper way. So normally in our interactions, it's only I and you. You did like this to me, so I'll do like this to you. So it just becomes a tit for tat kind of relationship. But if you understand, if that is the way we as devotees are also acting, then devotion has not become even a parameter in that relationship. So if devotion is a parameter, means yes, I do have to respond to the way this person is acting, but let my response be determined not just by this person's actions, but also by my devotional principles. So I was a few years ago in Melbourne, and I was having a question and answer session. So after that, one devotee asked a question. It is a written question. He says, I have to do a service with some devotee, but that devotee has openly told me that I don't like you. So what can I do in such a situation? And if that devotee is here, what would you like to tell that devotee? So I explained that actually we can't change other people's behavior. We can only inspire them to change their behavior. The door to personal change can be opened only from inside. Some door, there's no key by which you can cause the door to personal change to open from outside. We can only inspire them. So what is that? So what? How does that imply for us? Say if there is a clothes shop in which there is a attendant who is showing the clothes to the customers. Now some customers are extremely demanding. They may look at 100 dresses and they will not take even one dress. And then the attendant has to take all those 100 dresses, maybe put them all in the right place, maybe wash them, iron them. So, and if some customer repeatedly keeps coming and doing that, then normally when a customer comes into a clothes shop, all the attendants want to attend to that so that they will get some commission. But some customers, when they come, all the attendants go away. They just don't want to be there. He said that some people bring happiness wherever they go, and some people bring happiness whenever they go. So now suppose there is a customer like that. Now this attendant is being polite, is attending to that customer. Like, no, this is not right, this is not right, this is not right. At a human level, the attendant may get irritated. But if the attendant knows there's a camera over here, the boss is watching. And the attendant continues to be courteous, continues to be polite, then still the customer may not take take the clothes. But the boss may come afterwards and say, you are a cool guy. You know how to deal with tough people. And although the customer, the attendant did not make the sale, the boss may promote the attendant. You know how to deal with tough customers. You take care of this whole wing. And you train others how to deal with tough people. So what this means is, the external success may or may not come. The success at the level law of making the sale may not come, but success at the level of pleasing the boss may still come. So similarly for us, sometimes some people are just unreasonable. And we, if we focus that Krishna is like that boss who is watching us in our hearts, we focus on how can I please Krishna in this situation. And we act with that mood, then we please Krishna irrespective of what happens in that particular relationship. And by acting in a way that will please Krishna, that means acting in a cultured, courteous, mature way, not just hitting back at people for what they're doing. And that also creates the best foundation for that person's transformation. So in that way, we can, by our spiritual relationship with Krishna, increase the possibility of the material relationship also becoming stabler and better. Does it answer your question? Thank you. Hare Krishna. Any other questions? Who is that?
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, thank you so much. It's a very inspiring presentation. My simple question is, you talked about the audience from Google, Microsoft,
sorry,
and a few other,
okay, go ahead.
A few other places in Bay Area, right? The audience, one can assume, is outside of the, most of them is outside of the Krishna conscious domain.
Yeah.
So the question to you is, did you have to modify your central message of be fixed on Krishna and flexible on practice? To them, Krishna is an unknown entity. So
okay,
I'm trying to understand, because we all face the same situation when we go outside the community. So I'm trying to understand how did you convey that message to them?
Okay. So when people are not devotees and they're in professional settings, like in big companies, how do we share the central message of Krishna Bhakti? The important point is not that we have to share the whole message in one go. It's like we have to open the door of their head and heart. So I remember when I was, we all have, when we become devotees, at least when we start practicing bhakti initially, there is the zeal of the new convert. So I had just started practicing bhakti and I was working in a company. So I would go to I would go in my bus to my company. So then, and during the bus, you know, I would sometimes be chanting my rounds or reading the Bhagavad Gita. And then one friend made the mistake of asking, what are you doing? And then it was a 1 hour ride. And in that 1 hour, I tried to give a crash course of the entire philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita. And then, after that, whenever he would enter the bus, you know, he would peep in. There are two doors to a bus. So he would peep in, where am I? And then he would enter from the other door. So the point is that it's not necessary that we have to give the whole message in each interaction. If you look at our own life, it took so much time for us to become convinced about Krishna Bhakti. So we have to see what is their circle of interest. And we have to see this is the circle of Krishna Bhakti. So where do the two intersect? And we present points in that circle of interest, in that intersection between the two. So now, what is the circle of Krishna Bhakti is very big. And they may not be interested in that. So generally, most people live at the material level of consciousness. And we can't blame them for that. This is the material world. and people in material consciousness are only here. So we can have three different conceptions of the relationship between spiritual life and material life. One could be that material life is bad, it is temporary, it is miserable. Give up material life and practice spiritual life. So it's like your rejection of material life for practicing spiritual life. The second could be material life is good, but it's not enough. You will not get meaning, you will not get fulfillment unless you have something higher in your life. So one is rejection of material life for practicing spiritual life. Second is complementation. Material and spiritual both need to be taken care of. The third is that your spiritual life will improve your material life. That, say, by practicing spiritual life, your stress will go down, your anxiety will go down. And that way, you will be able to do what you are doing better. So, this is a rough analog to what was in the Vedic tradition, Karmakanda. Karmakanda is, you know, God as the cosmic provider. Now, many Christians now, in the past, the idea of God was a cosmic provider. But now, material things are available relatively easily, at least in the Western world. So the image of God, which comes in popular Christian churches, is not God as the cosmic provider, but God as the cosmic psychotherapist. Psychotherapist means, by going to God, your mind will become peaceful. You know, you'll feel secure, you'll feel safe. Now that is fine. That is also true. Now that is not the only thing we go to God for. But, so this is the model of spirituality as improving your material life. And now most spiritual or so-called spiritual organizations, they present spirituality only at this level. And say, for example, mindfulness has become very big in the corporate world because they feel that decreases stress, that helps improve the employees' performance. So there, most people are going to be concerned about improving their material life. And it is a fact that becoming spiritual, it may not necessarily increase our wealth or position or power, but it does increase our capacity to manage our mind and senses, to focus better, to decrease our stress, decrease our anxiety. So we may, especially in corporate settings, we may need to present this aspect of spirituality. And of course, we don't stay with this. We can speak one or two points about the first and second also. But if we give the first, it's, I practice spiritual life. Oh, really? What does spiritual life mean? Spiritual life means no meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex. Oh, really? They'll say no spiritual life. It's like sometimes we become very proud. I'm following these principles. That's fine. I say now if some new iPhone comes up, say iPhone 10 or 11, whatever it is. So if it comes. Now if there's an advertisement of the iPhone, will that advertisement start with the price? Never. Say this feature, this feature, this feature, this feature. And then we will have to click on various links then to find the price. Hey, this is too much. Huh? Maybe I'll pay for it. So whenever any promotion is done, first the product is told. The facilities and features of the product are told. And then finally the price is told. But sometimes in sharing Krishna Bhakti, first we'll tell the price. And we don't tell anything about what is the benefit. What is this offered? So what happens? People just get alienated. So we need to focus on what is in the circle of interest for the people. We don't have to compromise. There is a lot more also in spirituality. But this is what is your level, what is your interest? We focus on that. And through that we connect people with Krishna. So the hippies wanted to go high. And Prabhupada presented Krishna Bhakti as the way to not just go high, but stay high forever. So now, Prabhupada's message of Krishna Bhakti was very different from what the idea of these people was. But Prabhupada found a commonality. And he presented it that way. The most intriguing example of this would be one time when hippie came to Prabhupada and asked him, Prabhupada, what is the bliss of Vaikuntha like? And Prabhupada said, it is like an ocean of LSD. Somebody would say, Vaikuntha is so pure. LSD is a drug. It is tamasic. How can you compare the spiritual world and its happiness with the ocean of LSD? Which scripture is this given in? But in teaching scripture, the point is not just to get it right. The point is to get it across. We have to communicate the message in a way that people understand it. So for those people whose conception of bliss is taking LSD, ocean of LSD, I want to go there. So Prabhupada is expert in presenting like that. So we have to find out the circle of interest and present Krishna Bhakti in that circle of interest. Okay? Thank you. Hare Krishna. So, shall we stop here? Okay. Do we have time? Okay, last question. Yeah.
Thank you for your class. So you know, I was recommended by a lot of people to stay for the class. I was out and they kept saying, "You better stay. You better stay." So I stayed, and I'm not regretful. It's a wonderful class. I'm a musician, and a lot of times I've been in Krishna consciousness for like 20 years. And a lot of times I hesitate to just absorb myself in my work, you know, the music. So a lot of things you said really hit home. So I was wondering if you could give any pointers, because there's a lot of musicians out there too that want to practice Krishna consciousness, but they feel like they have to give up their work, you know. So I was wondering if you might be able to give a few pointers for the musicians.
So if somebody is a musician, but the work of music can be very absorbing, and then if you want to practice Krishna Bhakti, you may feel that I cannot be so absorbed in this. So that may cause us like hesitation either to practice Krishna Bhakti, or we can't be wholehearted in our music. And other musicians, if you want to share Krishna Bhakti with them, they also feel that I may have to give up my music. Not necessarily at all. Actually, Krishna says Paurusham Rishu, the 7th chapter in the 8th verse, he says that I am ability in human beings. So if somebody has been given musical ability, that is a gift given by Krishna. And Krishna also says Jayosmi Vyavasayosmi, that I am victory, I am adventure. So whatever is anybody's deepest experience is actually their experience of Krishna. Whatever is anybody's deepest experience is their experience of Krishna. They are just not aware that they are experiencing Krishna. Like some people may just go so deep into their particular field. This one author, I think Oliver Wendell Holmes, he wrote to his friend, "I spend my morning very productively today." He says, "After breakfast, I added a comma in one of my new poems. And before lunch, I deleted the comma." Now he considered that a productive way of using his morning. Now for him, you think, should this comma be there or not? There is absorbed in that. And in any field, if masterpieces have to come out, that kind of absorption is required. Now for most of us, you may think, what is so big deal? You know, we just put a comma, I don't put a comma, and move on with life. But for them, that experience of precise poetry, precise poetic composition, that is such a deep experience. So what is it that makes a set of symbols on a paper bring about such a deep experience? So Krishna says in 10.41 in the Bhagavad Gita that yad yad vibhuti matsattvam shrimadurjitam evava tattadevava gachattvam mamatejoamshi sambhava, that whatever is attractive in this world, it manifests a spark of Krishna's splendor. So if somebody is absorbed in music, you spend hours trying to get one note right, then what are they experiencing over there? They're experiencing Krishna. And the sound of music, why does it have so much power? Because it is Krishna who is manifesting through them it. Srila Prabhupada was so inclusive in his vision of Krishna Bhakti. He said on his book On the Way to Krishna that if somebody is alcoholic and they can't give up alcohol, he said that if they remember that the taste of alcohol is Krishna, then one day they will become great devotees. Not by drinking alcohol they will become great devotees. But by contemplating and analyzing, what is it about alcohol that is so attractive? And this is actually Krishna manifesting. So actually, if we contemplate this way, we can become conscious of Krishna even in the things that make us unconscious of Krishna. Alcohol makes us unconscious of Krishna. But if I think, what is it about alcohol that is so captivating? The spark of Krishna manifesting through it. So we can become conscious of Krishna even in the things that make us unconscious of Krishna. Now that doesn't mean that we can start drinking alcohol to experience Krishna there. No. Everything attractive comes from Krishna, but everything attractive doesn't take us to Krishna. So in this world there are many attractive things, but we have to focus on those attractive things which can take us towards Krishna. So sometimes we separate, this is spiritual, this is material. But actually, even in material, there can be various levels. There can be something which is anti-spiritual, something which is non-spiritual, something which is pro-spiritual. So if somebody is composing music which is just freaking with sensuality, you know, which is triggering lust and that kind of emotions in people, then that will be anti-spiritual. But there can be other kinds of music which can be uplifting, which can get people to goodness, which can make people more reflective. Music therapy is a way in which many people find healing and relief even from physical pain, what to physical disease, what to speak of mental distress. So this is, we are getting people to goodness. So in music, if we first of all understand that the attractiveness of music is actually coming from Krishna, that itself is one level of Krishna consciousness. But then we look within music, okay, which music will help me to become more connected with Krishna? And then that can help us to use our musical talent in Krishna's service. So we have to find out how best we can use our musical ability, and we have to encourage our friends, other musicians also to use that musical ability. Sometimes connecting with other devotee musicians, because if we are very attracted to a particular field, then other people can't understand what we are doing. So if I spend hours and hours on music, other devotees may not even understand. If I spend hours writing articles, what are you doing so long? But Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, we need to connect with like-minded devotees. Not just devotees, but like-minded devotees. So if you find out some other devotees who are also very musically inclined, and then connect with them, then not only will get understanding in terms of they will understand our interests, but they will also understand how to best connect us with Krishna. So we all need at least one mentor who understands our mind and helps us to understand our mind. A mentor who understands our mind. Okay, my mind is consumed by music. Yeah, I can understand it. My mind is also like that. But in music, if you do this, this is going too far. Don't get so extreme about it. But this is fine. They help us understand our mind. Then in that like-minded association, we can not only move forward in Krishna Bhakti while practicing our music or a particular interest, but we can develop that interest so that it helps us flourish in our bhakti. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Gaura Bhaktavinoda ki.